Welcome to episode 6 of the Rebel Army podcast. On this week's podcast, we're joined by Cork City legend and Premier League legend, Damien Delaney. And we look back on a very exciting weekend of fixtures and look forward to another busy one ahead. Yeah, welcome back to another episode of the Rebel Army podcast, episode 6, and joined as always by Aaron Howey. How are you?
Not too bad, Stephen. Episode 6.
Episode 6 now. Yeah, we're into our, you know, a month and a half of this, and we're top of the league.
We are, yeah.
You know, that has to be a good thing. Not us as a podcast, actually, the club.
Yeah.
We've fallen down the league. I don't know.
I'd always rather the club be top of the league. It's, what is it, 5 games in now, top of the league? A top of the league, top of the table clash on Friday. So it's all go.
Yeah, it was a great night on Friday night. Great first half in particular. A lot of excitement there. Youngest ever goal scorer for Cork City.
Yeah, for the men's team.
For the men's team,
yeah. But what a finish that was as well. And that's been coming brilliant. For him. He's been kind of getting close to getting a goal the last couple of weeks, but what a finish.
Another clip of that's going viral of him again.
Yeah, Carl O'Sullivan must be a trending topic on Twitter every Friday night at this rate, but yeah, well-deserved as well. It's a great goal.
So a 2-0 win. Did you get a chance to talk to anybody afterwards?
We did. We got Tim Clancy and Greg Bulger in for the post-match interview. So we've got a quick bit with Tim here first.
Yeah, listen, we can take loads of positives out of the first half from an attacking point of view. I think we were getting joy down the sides. And again, we've got two more different scores in the team again. And it's something that we spoke about in pre-season, that there's a lot of quality and a lot of goals in the team. And it's great to see Muzz getting his first goal of the season and little Sully as well.
Yeah, great goal from Cal, wasn't it?
Yeah, listen.
Very direct, didn't he?
Again, that's what I've spoken to Cal about. And I said I want him to be more positive and get at players. And if he gives the ball away, we don't matter. We don't mind. Because we want him to be more and more energetic and positive. And he's got so much ability. Last week, he gets his first assist of the season. And he's added that with a goal now. So again, listen, he's flying. He's doing really well for us. And we're looking forward to seeing the progress he makes.
Yeah, and I suppose the first half, Tim, was that your best half of the season so far?
I think we played well last week. I think we were good up in Finn Harp second half in the conditions that we was. I thought we were very good last week. It was another half time and we got the 2 goals second half and controlled the game. I felt the first half this week was very good. And then probably subconsciously you start protecting a 2-0 lead, and even though we didn't probably carry as much of the track going forward or had much of the ball, we still looked dangerous on the counter-attack as well. And if you look at the game back, Brad's made one save low down to his left from a sort of second phase from a corner. And apart from that, I think they've had one shot that's just past the post from outside the box, and we restricted them to very few chances.
So yeah, it sounds like he's a happy man, top of the table, and interesting seeing he thinks there's a lot of goals in the team as well.
Yeah, and it's the goals have been coming from, I know Jack's got a few, but Kyle's chipping and Kean Coleman's got one. Like the if we're a team that everyone can score, then that's great. Yeah. And
because there was a worry before the start of the season, but I think some of the players have kind of said that they were up against. I think Malik kind of said that, you know, Nathan kind of mentioned that they were up against top teams, but they knew the goals were going to come.
Yeah, Tim said it as well in some of the interviews throughout preseason that was the logic. Like, he wanted to be up against the top Premier Division teams, because you learn more from, you know, a hard fought game like that than you could go out and play a game and, you know, win 5-6-0 or whatever. But you learn more from the tougher games. And there was, Malik said it last week that, you know, there was one goal scored in preseason and people were panicking saying where the goal's going to come from. And the goals have been coming, and long may they continue, and we'll stay where we are, hopefully.
Yeah, it was a tough weekend for the women's team.
Yeah, it was a difficult one. 5-0 loss away to Galway on Saturday. Game was actually moved from where it was originally supposed to be. We were on the way to, due to be named DC Park, which is Galway's home stadium. Mm. But there had been a match there the night before. Galway played Shamrock on TV the night before, and the pitch cut up massively, and there was a lot of puddling and stuff on it on the Saturday morning. So it was called as we were kind of just coming into Galway, but we knew the game would be on. It would just be a different venue. And that was sorted. We got there. Kickoff time was pushed a little bit.
Yeah.
And 5-0 loss, which was disappointing. another game now next weekend, the different tournament as well, so they can kind of put that behind them. And
I know, look, I know when Danny was in here a few weeks ago, he said, you know, it's going to take time because there's a new squad kind of, again, kind of coming together on this one, I suppose. So, you know, a lot of new signings. There's a young team there as well, like, as well on top of that. So all of that takes its time, like.
Exactly, yeah. And look, it is very early in the season and probably hope it's an outlier of a result in the grand scheme of things come the end of the season. But difficult one. And it's probably one of those games that you just want to put behind you. And I'm sure they're just itching to get on the pitch now again next Saturday and just try and put it right and get a different game of football in.
How do the academy teams get on over the weekend?
Under 20s men's team were off this weekend. They were the idle team. The women's 17s were also due to be on Saturday, but that was postponed shortly before kickoff. The 15s then were the only team that did actually play on Saturday. And that was a 3-0 win away to Kerry in Mount Hawk Park. David Dunn got 2 and Ryan O'Leary got 1. On Sunday, the women's 19s were away to Treaty and won that 2-1. Shauna Sheehan and Kaylee Still got the goals. The men's under 17s also won 2-1. That was against Waterford up in Douglas Hall. Evan Pilo and Jaden O'Donovan with the goals. The 14s won 2-0 against Kerry in Mayfield. Then Jack Cunningham and Ollie Lynch got the goals there.
So on a bad weekend.
Yeah, good weekend.
And speaking of the academy, actually, did I see there's a new sponsor?
Yeah, Everseen have come on board. They're the new main sponsor of the academy. All the academy teams, you would.
A technology company out of Cork, aren't
they? They are. And there's a couple of pictures on social media at the weekend of the Everseen logo on the kits, and it looks really good. 15s, I think it was, were the first team to actually wear the new blue away jersey as well that hadn't had an outing until the weekend, and it looked class. But Everseen will come on board. That's been announced today or yesterday at the time, probably by the time this comes out. But great to have them on board. Again, a Cork company. We have a lot of Cork companies coming on now. Everseen have been around for a while, but they've obviously stepped up their involvement this year. There's a lot of Cork companies involved with us now this year, so that's great to see for Cork as a whole as well.
And speaking of companies, there's going to be some opportunities for other companies to get involved with the club. I see we're announcing details of Golf Classics.
Yeah, so the golf days are back this year. Usual annual Golf Classic is back. We've got 2 corporate golf days and we've got a new addition as well. So we've got like a family fun day, foot golf. In June.
Down in Kinsale.
So that'll be an enjoyable one. That kind of, gives an opportunity.
We
might have to do a Rebel Army podcast team down there. We get a few of us down there. Yeah. But that's a new addition to the schedule for this year. A chance for all the family to go along and have a bit of fun.
So kids can take part and everything.
Kids, all the parents, the grandparents, whoever wants to do it. Yeah, it's open to all. And that's new in the calendar for this year.
So when's it taking place?
That's on Friday the 14th of June down in Folk Golf in Kinsale.
So a bit of time yet before that happens.
Yeah. Bit of time, yeah. The annual Golf Classic then at Lee Valley, just over from us here, that is on Thursday the 19th of September. And then we've got the 2 corporate golf days that were kind of introduced last year. One is at the K Club on the 22nd of July. And then there's one in Cork just before that on the 1st of July at Cork Golf Club.
Down Little Island.
Yeah.
Excellent. So there, if you're a golf enthusiast,
which there are plenty.
Yeah, including our next guest that's coming in. I know he spends his days playing golf now since he's retired, but we're delighted to have, I suppose, someone's played at the top level in terms of playing the Premier League against some of the best players,
Exactly, yeah. He's played with incredible players. He's played against incredible players and he's been involved in some memorable matches. There's that the Chris Stanbull match, the 3-3 Crystal Palace and Liverpool. He was involved in that. So he's played at the top and he's come back and he's played for Cork City and he's still involved with Cork City.
And
he's
still involved with us. And
there's a lot to talk about with Damien.
I think let's bring him in and find out his story. Welcome to the podcast, Damien.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Before we kind of get into what you're up to today, let's rewind the clock a small bit. Yeah. Where'd you start football in Cork?
I suppose I started in just playing schoolboys. I was at Douglas Hall for a couple of years and then I transferred off to Avondale.
Yeah.
So I spent all my youth football at Avondale, up to under 16. And then I suppose a seminal moment was when I was 16 and I was playing youth football, minor, which was under 18. And we played a game against Cork City and Jerry Harris was the manager.
Was Jerry the manager of the youths?
Of the Cork City youths, yeah. And then after the game, Jerry came over and he said, do you want to come play for Cork City next year?
Yeah.
And that was it, I did. I went out there and I played and Jerry was my manager for the first, when I was 17, so my 2 years youths. First year, Jerry was the manager. And we had a great team, like great players, like Greg O'Halloran and people like that were in it.
Yeah.
And Kerry, serious outfit. And we lost the FAIU Cup semi-final, maybe, or I think we got beat up in Dublin off home farm, I think, beat us.
Yeah.
Then my second year, because Jerry was kit man as well at the time.
That's right, he was doing everything.
He was doing everything.
He was the club secretary and everything.
Yeah, he was doing everything. And then Jerry kind of stepped aside and Paul Bowden came in. And Paul Bowden was our manager for second year, and we ended up winning the FAI U Cup final then. And that was, I'd say the first year's U team was better. But the second year we ended up winning it. But there was Alan Bennett then came on board, Joe Gamble, Mickey Green, Alan Malloy, Damien O'Rourke, Paddy Crowley, Damien Rodis. So we'd have serious youth team. In fairness, a lot of lads went on to do. I'm after forgetting a couple of lads there. I know they'd probably be asking me why, but and that was it. Then those were my 2 years youths and.
Started breaking into the first team.
And then the following year, then the club was just going full time.
Yeah.
It was just kind of, we were coming out of youths. And it was kind of the back end of that, City team that won the Cup in 98, the likes of Patsy.
And Derek Hall. And all them
Derek guys. Was there, yeah, Don yeah. Caulfield, Morley, Davey Barry was a manager. As I said,
they were trying to push for the league a bit.
Kelvin, Mark Kerry. I could name that team now because I remember when we were near the U team, we used to go and train with them sometimes in the farm.
Yeah.
With Davey, we were only kids coming through. But then Davey stepped aside in 99, I think it was maybe.
That's right, yeah.
And Derek Mumfield came in.
Yeah.
And that's when the club was going full time. So the club was, that was the first time it went full time.
Was it only full time after Davey? Yeah. Davey was a plumber. There was a lot of them.
And that's why I think they wanted to go full time and they needed bodies to train every day.
Yeah.
And then Derek Mumfield came in and he obviously found it hard because a lot of lads, like the Decky Daly, and them lads all had very good jobs.
Yeah.
Don Caulfield was on the road. Pat was working for Adidas, I think, at the time still. Yeah. Obviously Derek and, they all had jobs, so to get them to give them up and come full time was hard.
Yeah.
So we used to train at lunchtime. And those lads used to try and get time off work and train in the thing. So basically just all of us young lads from the U team were basically just going and training every day. But the previous year we were on the Foss course.
William Murphy was there?
This was Mick Conroy. Paul Bannon.
Yeah.
We're with us on the Foss course and was just over here actually in the ESB club.
Yeah.
So we used to just meet there every morning. I used to get the number 7 bus in and then get the number 8 out to Bishopstown and get off. I used to stop actually just short of the farm. I used to walk the rest of the way out to the ESB. That's what we used to do, man. Yeah, and I used to get a lift off. There was a neighbour of mine worked in Wilton, so I used to get a lift as far as the CUH till some mornings and get the number 8 bus out and then walk the rest of the way.
Yeah.
So we were used to being full-time footballers because back then, I know the Foss course was different. There's a lot of education and...
Yeah, it's more to do with Stefan Neff.
Whereas us, we were double football. We were just football in the morning, football in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And there was a couple of times tutors used to come in upstairs in the ESB club. I don't even know. Is it even still there? Is the ESB club still there?
I don't know, to be honest.
Upstairs, the bar area upstairs, tutors used to come in and we used to do stuff, but no one paid any attention to it. But it was double football, it was brilliant. And so then you'd go on the night time and train at a club, So we were in the U team we were doing football 3-4 sessions a day and we were but we loved it. We wouldn't have had it any other way. And then when City turned full time, we were only delighted. So we were getting the same money, about 60 Irish punts a week, or 65, I think it was.
Yeah.
We were all living at home, we're all only kids. And so we trained with Derek and then that season started and I got on the team.
You played a fullback first, did you?
I played fullback kind of midfield. I was midfield in the U team, actually centre midfield in the U team. Myself and Joe Gamble were in the midfield. I kind of got a first team. Gareth Cronin was left back.
That's right, yeah.
And Gareth got injured. So they kind of asked me, could you play left back?
Yeah.
So Derek put me in the team and I remember we played a couple of games. We were up in Dublin. I remember playing UCD. Playing Rovers. Look, obviously I did reasonably well, okay. And then Derek Mumfield was living in the Rosestone Park Hotel and he's just I remember getting a phone call one day saying, could I come and see him? I thought I was in trouble,
Yeah.
And the gaffer says he wants to see you. You're like, oh geez, what have we done? So I went down to Rosestone Park Hotel and I just met him and he said, look, we've had an offer from Leicester and we've accepted it.
Leicester had some time. They were trying to get a connection with the club at the time.
Yeah, because initially, before there at Mountfield, probably the bit of mistake was Colin Murphy got the job.
That's right, yeah.
But Colin, he was there about 2 weeks. So he had it, but then Peter Taylor got the Leicester job, and him and Peter Taylor were quite close.
So he went back over there.
So he went here, I said 2 weeks. But obviously, he took a shine to me, maybe, potentially, just said that. So anyway, that was it. He said we're a bid from Leicester. I've accepted it. That was it. Gone.
And like Leicester, they weren't a Premier League club.
They were, yeah.
Oh, were they?
They were, yeah. It was just after the Martin O'Neill era. Like Martin O'Neill won, remember he won the League Cup in 98 and stuff
Heskey
like that.
And all them lads.
Oh, yeah. Like Matty Elliott, Jerry Taggart, sorry. And the Impey, Frank Sinclair, Muzzy Izzet, Robbie Savage, Neil Lennon.
Oh, that was big for you.
Oh, it was incredible, man. It was outrageous. Like walking down there. I mean, that was probably the last. Like, I always laugh. Like the Cork City team that I kind of started training with the likes of Decky, Patsy, John, like
characters, like
men's men, it was, you trained hard and you played hard, what I mean? And then I went off to Leicester and it was straight in, and they were even worse, that group of fellas. So that was kind of the environment I kind of grew up in, where it was like, you kick the shit out of each other in training, but then everyone got on afterwards and that kind of a thing. So I just went over there and I went straight into they didn't have 23s back then, it was a reserve team. So just went straight into the reserve team. I think went over in maybe September.
No transfer windows or anything like that.
No, there was no transfer windows. So I went over and I think it was home for Christmas break then, because we were left home for maybe 10 days over Christmas. And I was here in Cork, and then I got a phone call that I was needed back. There was some injuries and people were sick and stuff like that over Christmas. So they were saying, look, we need numbers for training. Can you come back? So I was only home for a couple of days. I think I went home, maybe 27, 28 of December. I'm back over to the UK. And then all of a sudden was in with the first team.
Oh.
I think I did reasonably well because they kept me. Yeah. So obviously when all the lads got fit again, I was kept over the first team. So obviously kind of acquitted myself to the point where they said, look, you can stay with us now. So, and then I think maybe...
What age were you then? About 19,
20? 19 I was, 18, 19 maybe. And then maybe the end of that January, then Leicester had Villa away in an FA Cup tie at Villa Park. And I started that game just in a cup tie. And I was Dion Dublin, Paul Merson, serious Aston Villa team. John Gregory was the manager. That was a Villa team now. I know Villa are doing really well at the moment. And I saw a stat the other day, the last time Villa were in Europe, John Gregory was the manager. And I think it was then, it was the late 90s.
Yeah, I think they went to the League Cup or something around that
time. That was the last time they were in Europe. John Gregory was the manager. So that was that. And then... what day are we today? 18th, 19th of March. Then Paddy's Day in the middle of March, made my Premier League debut.
Whoa, against who?
United at Old Trafford.
What a place to make your debut.
It's incredible, yeah. It's still my first and my last Premier League appearance was at Old Trafford and Old Trafford. my last. So,
and did family get a chance to come over when you made your debut?
Back then, I don't know if they still do it now, but back then what they used to say is they used to bring a couple of players just to kind of be part of the squad. So back then it was only a 16-man squad.
That's right, yeah.
So they used to bring maybe 18, and I was always kind of 17th, 18th man. And then on the Friday I was told, you're travelling with the first team. So I was like, oh, okay, fine. But obviously when you travel in, you get two tickets for a game.
Yeah.
So I said to my former dad, and I said, look, at United tomorrow, and this was the 99 United team, that was a who's who, this was in the year 2000 maybe.
Your first Premier League game, you're marking
we were Keane and Butler in the midfield, but then they came over to the game, but I was actually really excited going up from Leicester to Manchester, because I thought I was going to get to go to Old Trafford, because I'd never been. Okay. So I was going up thinking, I get to watch a game, or I get to, I'll be sitting in the stand, but I don't care, I get to go to Old Trafford. And then before the game, I had a meeting at maybe 12:30 or whatever before we go to the stadium, and I kind of just walked in, sat at the back of the room, and Addy Akinboye was sitting next to me, and the manager's pulled over a flip chart, and I wasn't even paying attention. And next thing, Addy started... not elbowing me like that. Yeah, yeah. And I was like, what? What's, I said, look, Addy, what's wrong? And he was like that, like looking at the flip chart. And my name was on the flip chart. And I was just like going, I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
I couldn't figure it out. I was like, is this? And then you kind of go into this like, is this a dream? Is this reality? Kind of, am I asleep at the minute? Type, like, because you know the amount of emotions that flow through that quickly. And by then though, it was fine. I think that's why the manager did it that way, because he was just straight downstairs on the bus to the stadium. And then I just remember driving up from the city centre out to Old Trafford, and like you can see Old Trafford from a long way away as you're leaving Manchester city centre. You can see it on the horizon, and it was quite a slow bus journey obviously, but then you know, as you get close to it, you just realise, but you just kind of go, look, it's happening, you know, there's not much you can do about it now, so just go with it. And the game went really well, went quite well. So, but as I said, that United team was just incredible. Like, it was an outrageous.
Were you playing fullback?
I played centre midfield.
Centre midfield.
They went with a three-man midfield.
So against the two lads.
So Keane and Butt, and Keane, Butt and Sheringham were in the midfield with, I think it was Cole at the top end of the pitch. And Giggs played, Stam, Dennis Irwin, and another quirk of faith. Dennis Irwin was captain that day because it was his 500th Premier League appearance.
Oh.
So Dennis played, I think it was like Yapstam, Gary Neville. Like it was a who's who of Premier League heroes.
There was three Corkmen on the pitch.
Well, it was, yeah. So Roy, because I remember coming out and Roy was at the back of the queue or in the middle of the queue. Yeah. And obviously it was the first time I'd ever even seen Roy. Like, and you just kind of looking going, that's him. And I was like, what's he doing back there? And then I saw Dennis had the armband, and by then I was like, I don't even care if I knew it afterwards why. And anyway, the game went well. That was in 24 years ago.
Whoa.
Is it? Yeah, 2000 it was, I think, maybe.
So
St. Patrick's Day, 24 years ago, Dennis was the captain, and then I got Roy's shirt afterwards.
Do you still have it?
I still have it, yeah. I said, like, was that old Vodafone one, you know?
Yeah, yeah, because they won the treble just the year before.
Yeah, it was, the year before they won the treble. It was, and we lost 2-0 on the day.
Like, in a short space of time, you had gone from training out in Bishopstown in six months previously to being on the pitch at Old Trafford.
Bishopstown wasn't even there, it was the farm.
Was it the farm?
So like it was, I know they're next to each other, but like that stadium wasn't even, I don't know if that stadium was even there, was it?
The stadium was there, but I think it was Dome by the club. Yeah. There was so many,
So, that was it. It was just like, very short period of time from playing League of Ireland to going over and doing well. But I was playing in the reserve team games, and it was the reserve Premier League. So like a lot of the reserve team games was, you know, we were in the reserve South, you know, we played against Tottenham, played against Arsenal in the reserve. So that was my kind of first taste of it. And obviously they did quite well, or did okay in those games, that when they were short at Christmas, I got called back and was put in with the first team, and then obviously stayed in with the first team. And that was pretty much it.
And how long did you stay with Leicester for then?
Well, I was at Leicester then, geez, man, 2003 maybe. I'm not good with dates. But Leicester got relegated. So we stayed up that year. Then the following year, started the first game of the season away to Arsenal at Highbury. Whoa. And it was the Arsenal, Thierry Henry, I'm not sure what the Invincibles, but like it was like Henry, Ljungberg, Pires, Vieira. Like Vieira for me is still the best player I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Oh, like honestly, like Patrick Vieira in real life. Oh my goodness! Like you've never. They beat us 5-0 at Highbury, first game of the season, and I played in centre midfield again. And like he is massive, and he just after, like, I mean, he was just after winning the Euros, I think, the year before or something like that, or the summer previous. Obviously, they were World Cup winners, but Bergkamp played, Henri, Ljungberg, Pires, Saul Campbell was a centre back.
Yeah,
it was an outrageous football team at the old Highbury, which I think is one of the most beautiful places that's ever. I know a lot of listeners here don't even know, or probably have only seen video clips of Highbury, but that was like when you arrived at Highbury, they had the marble entrance with the big double doors.
I think they're apartments, no, or something.
Yeah, but it was like you were walking into like a Regency drama. It was just the big double doors and then the marble floors and the change rooms. It was just like the memory I have of that place was incredible. Obviously, got beat 5-0, so didn't go great for us that year, but still at the same point, you're kind of going, it was something else. But like I said, Vieira for me, man, it was just like outrageous,
unbelievable.
Like just just had so much control of what he was doing. He was 6'4". He was fast. He was so technically gifted. Like, he could do everything and anything, and he just ran the whole midfield, ran right over the top of me, to the point where I was actually looking at him going, fuck. But then you have to put into context, you know what I mean, what I was and what he was, like, you know. So that was that. And then Leicester got relegated that year, played a few more games that year. Managers changed, Dave Bassett came in. It all got very messy at Leicester around that time. They got relegated, and then I went out on loan the following year because, I wasn't a player I was going to play in the reserves. I hated reserves in football.
Yeah.
So
what happens then? Do you kind of say, look, I want to move on?
Yeah, but you have to play well in the reserves because that's how you get out on loan.
Yeah.
Right? So reserve team games used to be on a Monday night, and he's just playing them and just say, look, this is my chance to get, because scouts are at it. And then I went around to Stockport, Mansfield. Where else are they going on to?
QPR as well, yeah?
No, that was further on when I was at Leicester. And then I left Leicester and went to Hull, who were in League Two at the time.
But they were a team coming up, kind of.
Oh, they were starting to emerge. Listen, like people talk about big football clubs. Hull's a big club, like, and they just finished the KC Stadium, 26,000 seat, brand new state of the art stadium.
Yeah.
And they were just kind of moving on from that. And then this businessman from Leeds bought the club, a guy called Alan Pearson. And then they were just recruiting players. Yeah. And I was told, like we're only going to be in League Two. You know, we're going to get back-to-back promotions and be in the Championship in 2 years. And I was like, oh, that sounds good. So I went down there and we did back-to-back promotions, went from League Two to League One to Championship. Then had, obviously, bulk of my career in the Championship, yeah.
You went from there to QPR to Ipswich.
And then I left Hull in 2008, maybe, I'd say. I left in January.
Yeah,
I left in January. I was playing every week, but there was ins and outs there, man. There was things like, you know, there was so much change at the club. I suppose you kind of, like, I was there from League Two, and then the club, at the time, Hull that year signed like JJ Okocha, Ray Parler, Danny Mills, like the club went on a huge spending spree, and I was still playing every week.
Yeah,
and I was kind of going, "Can I get a new contract?" And like, no. And I kept saying like, but, and then I think when you're at a club that length of time, they treat you like part of furniture. You know what I mean?
They take it for granted.
They do.
Bring in the stars, we'll pay them, but
exactly. That's what I kind of felt. Yeah. I was kind of going, the club would move so far, so fast, and I was still playing every week, and still contributing every week, and still doing really, really well. So then in the January, I just got a phone call saying, do you want to go to QPR? QPR had just been taken over by like Briatore and all them people. So I just got a phone call and I kind of a little bit of petulance, kind of said, look, go on. Yeah, because I said, look, you guys have had enough opportunities now. You know, if you rated me, you'd look after me. And I didn't feel like they were. So I just kind of went, right, I'm out. And I left, and then they got promoted. But QPR was great. Fabulous football club. Still one of my favourites.
Yeah.
Great football club. Great location. Great stadium. Like, right in Shepherd's Bush, West London. Stadium is just in the middle of, like, I don't know if you've ever been to Loftus Road.
No, I haven't.
Right off
half of London.
Shepherd's Bush, West London, like central London, like W12, but like, so you've like Shepherd's Bush Green, and then the stadium is just off it, and then you walk down the road and it's just got like huge council flats, like, and then all of a sudden it's just a stadium
in the middle of it,
and you're just like, and it's a tiny little stadium, but it's a great stadium, little two-tier, but it's just vertical.
Yeah,
it only holds like maybe 20,000, maybe, I think 22,000, but like, you talk about fans on top, yeah, atmosphere.
Brilliant.
Like, I still, like, one thing I don't miss a lot, but one thing I miss is those midweek night games at Loftus Road.
Yeah.
Like, there was a great atmosphere, you know, especially the winter nights when it was raining, it was wet or cold, and pitches were greasy, you know, fans packed in, super stadium, like.
And then you were in the Championship at the time.
Yeah, so we stayed in the Championship with them, and then it's there 2 years, I think it was.
And the championship is tough, I'd say.
I tell you what,
it's probably one of the hardest leagues in the world.
It's the hardest, like, absolutely. And I think it's the best league as well. I know the Premier League's brilliant, but like, the Championship is serious place to play.
So many games as well.
So many games, so competitive. Like, you play Saturday, Tuesday, you're traveling, you know, your training. It's just a survival of the fit. It's toughest. It's the toughest. I think it's like the fourth biggest league in Europe
for attendance. Yeah,
like
yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, but it's a great division. I know a lot of people kind of look at it, and even now, when you know, I see people talking about like the national team, like saying, "Oh, he only plays in the championship." I'm like, "Going, have you ever tried playing in the championship?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
have yeah. you ever like even set like." Most people wouldn't last 10 minutes in a game of the championship. The pace, the physicality, it's a different type of game to the Premier League. Premier League is a lot more possession-based, but that is just like the blue touch paper and whoever hangs on the longest. And that's what it is, man. And it's yeah. a great division and I loved it. But to survive in that league, 'cause what you have to do is serious. Like you have to be physically, mentally really strong because you get beaten a Saturday heavily and then you're like, coming Sunday, Monday, you're traveling because you got a game Tuesday night, wherever, Bristol or Plymouth.
We anywhere in the country.
Like,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
you know, like it's, and you're, you know, it's tough. And you're getting back at like 3 or 4 o'clock on Wednesday morning because you've just played and you've been beat. You got to come in, train Wednesday and then Thursday. You're not really training. You're just warming up, cooling down, walkthrough sessions, and then bang, you're into it again Saturday. And then they still do this thing. I know they've lightened a little bit, but previously there before Christmas you'd be playing like Saturday, and then if like Steam's Day or Boxing they fell on it Monday, you play Saturday, Monday.
Oh yeah.
And then
yeah.
you play like Thursday, and then you play like Saturday, so you could have like 5 games in 8 days. Like you, that's happened. And then right at the very end at Easter was the worst because you're already after playing like 36-37 games, you're out on your feet, and then you play Saturday, Easter, Monday, like 2 games in 48 hours.
And it's all for the money for the clubs. It's tradition.
It's
nearly.
Tradition. Yeah. Like if you try to take that away from them, they would burn the place down. Like yeah. Stevens' Day, they're out in force. And then like you'd play Good Friday or Saturday, and then you'd play Easter Monday. And their whole holiday thing is based around those games. And it's part of the, you know, they celebrate Easter Sunday or they celebrate Christmas Day, but then Boxing Day, they're out to football or racing or whatever it is, but primarily football. And so like you're wrecked. Yeah. And like all of a sudden you got to play Saturday, Monday. And I remember doing that, man. And anyone that's played in the championship and has done that is, if you've played a full season in the championship, I remember 1 year, I think my record was like 55 games in one season, which is like, yeah. and that took so much out of me. I didn't start the following season really well at all. Like I was really sluggish and get going till like maybe October, because like 55 games at that level, that intensity was like, I was out of my feet, to be honest. I never really recovered from it in hindsight. But anyway, it's a great division, yeah.
But, you know, you were saying there, like people are often kind of looking down at people that play in that division. Did you find that you were kind of hard done by with the Irish setup then as well? Because like you weren't getting called up to the Irish.
I wouldn't say it was hard done by like at all. No, because I was, it was actually that year I got called into the Ireland squad.
When you were at QPR?
At QPR at the end of that year. So that was my first.
Is that your first?
If I got called in, Trapp was just manager, I think it was.
And none of the previous guys, like when you were playing Leicester in the Premier League? No.
And 21s, because I was still only 19. Don Gibbons was 21.
And it was an established team in the World Cup, I suppose, 2002.
It was hard to get in. Like I remember going into the 21s that time, like. Like an incredible under-21 team that was there. Like, I mean, yeah. like John O'Shea was in it now. Jim Goodwin, who was manager. Like Clinton Morrison was in the 21s. Like Richie Sadler was in the 21s. Liam Miller, you know, all those players were in the under-21s. It was like an amazing under-21 team.
Some and you had got come in. Up having won a
oh,
couple
Oh, I came through Brian Carr's youth.
Yeah,
like,
the under-16s and under-18s.
So trying to break into that then was but I played a lot of 21s games in for Don Givens and was involved in a lot of squads. But then obviously my career went a bit down the divisions and whatnot, but ended up coming back. And it was that first summer in 08 maybe. Maybe it might have been 09. Trapp came and took over. And then I was just in all the squads really. But again, like...
How was he like?
Trapp was good, man.
Yeah,
I liked him. Very good. Didn't speak much English, but he kind of knew what he wanted.
Yeah.
And he's very enthusiastic. He used to take part in the sessions and so far. He used to demonstrate a lot of things. I don't know how old Trapp is, but he was at least 70 when that happened. And he was running around the training pitch, this little Italian fella just screaming in Italian. Liam Brady was like his translator. So Liam Brady would be like talking over the top of him. Looking back now, it would have been quite comical, like, you know, but... Trapp, Trapp used to lose his temper or lose his shit in Italian and just like screaming, like, and Liam Brady was supposed to like translate. then Liam would just go silent and you'd know that like he just couldn't translate what he's saying because it was probably so bad. Liam was just like, yeah, we leave it there. I think they get the message. As opposed to like literally him calling us all cunts or whatever he's calling us. Yeah, so, but again, it couldn't be hard done by, look at that Ireland team, man. Like John O'Shea, Richard Dunn, like Shea Given, like Kev Kilban, you know, Glenn Whelan, Robbie Duffer, like Aidan McGeady, like they were all playing every week in the Premier League.
And like all of them. Players like Damien Duffer playing in the Champions League and winning leagues with Chelsea and stuff like that. Is it like, you
unbelievable,
know?
Yeah. I mean, Dunny was playing every week for Villa at the time. That's or right, where, yeah. wherever he was. I think it was Villa he was at the time.
Robbie Keane was in every club.
Robbie was Robbie, but like that was an outrageous like time to be involved with Ireland. Like the level of players like Kevin Doyle, there's one I forgot.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
like Doyle or Longy was in there as well. But Glenn Whelan was playing every week for Stoke. Like Dunny and Sean St. Ledger were just like an incredible partnership at centre back for Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, with Shea then behind him, Killer was playing left back and Shazy was playing right back. And you're like going, like that's that's an amazing back four goalkeeper. So what are we going to do? Going knocking traps door going, I want to play.
And we were after dropping back into defence at this stage.
Yeah, yeah. I established myself as centre back then. That was
so
position,
that you were kind of gone from midfield back into defence.
That was only when I was a kid. Like I think when I went off to Leicester, I was moved in at centre back. And so that was that really.
And so QPR then, you went to Ipswich after that?
Ipswich then, yeah. Just got a phone call one summer. I wanted to go. I told QPR I wanted to leave because it was a bit of a shit show. You know, the club was a bit of a circus at the time. Sorry, it's a bit harsh, but like, you know, there was Flavio Briatore owned the club and I think we'd 8 managers in one season. And it was just madness. And Ian Dowie got the job that year and we were 6th after 10 games. And we were a good team. Like that, we were really good. And I thought we were going to do some damage. And then he just sacked Ian Dowie because no one still knows why. And then brought in like a plethora of like Italian and foreign managers that knew they were going to get sacked. And I think we'd 8, including caretakers.
Crazy.
In one season. So by the end of the season, I just kind of said, oh, I'm done with this, to be honest with you. So I told him that I would want to leave. And then obviously got a phone call. Roy then just got a job at Ipswich. And that was that.
So Roy brought you in.
So Roy, yeah.
And you had Colin Healy as well at the time as well.
Colin came later.
Was that?
And Colin, when did Colin come in? Actually, you know, it might have been. I think it was, I signed, I got, jeez, man, you have asked Colin that now when he came in. I can't remember. Yeah, I think Colin might have signed that first year. Right. Actually, I think you might be right. We came over to pre-season, came over to Ireland for pre-season, played Cork City in a friendly match. And
Col, was that your first time back at the cross then?
Yeah. Col played really well. And I think he took Col that. Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
But Colin didn't play much under Roy. Like, but I remember, I don't know, you'd have to ask Colin, but I don't think Colin was that keen on coming because I think he was happy at Cork City.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, Cork City were doing really well at the time. They were winning leagues. They were, you know, and Colin was central to all that. And I remember he was hesitant to come. But I think obviously when Roy phones you, you're going to go. And then Roy brought him over. And geez, I don't know how many games Colin played for Ipswich, but I don't think it was many. Like, you know, he was on the bench a few times and stuff like that. But and Colin was maybe, speaking of a turn, I can't speak for Colin, but I think he was a bit pissed off that, you know, he came, you know, he gave up a good thing that he had at Cork City.
Yeah,
and went over to Ipswich and then didn't play a whole pile.
And what about you? Did you get to... Were you playing week
I played it, I played every week, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I think there was only once he dropped me out of the team. I can't remember what it was for. I think he might have given away a penalty or something.
Yeah.
But, like, I played pretty much every game for him. So that kind of...
And you were there after he was gone then?
And then I was there after he was gone. He got sacked and Paul Jewell came in. And then that turned into a bit of a shit show at Ipswich. Like, it was all just a bit messy. And Julie came in and then they started signing players that were, you know, it just got all... And by the way, Ipswich is a fabulous football club. Like, if I signed for Ipswich and was in a different stage in my career, like East Anglia there, that part of the world, you know, if you look, like, a lot of players go to Ipswich and they retire there and they stay there.
Yeah.
Because it's just idyllic, scenic country drives. You've the beaches over there on the East Coast. London's only an hour on the train into Liverpool Street. It's a beautiful part of the world.
Yeah.
And it's a great football club, and I'm delighted to see them doing well at the moment, because if they came back up, it would be brilliant. But like, when we were like, Ipswich were getting like 32,000 every week.
It was a big support.
Like, huge supported football club. Yeah. Great training ground. And as I said, idyllic place to live if you'd family and kids, but a nice house in the country and like no traffic jams.
Yeah, yeah.
And on a Sunday, you can take a drive up into those, that countryside there, as if you're driving towards Norwich. Like, there's so many nice little like bars and pub restaurant type things, you know, that you could sit.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a great spot. So that was that, man. And then at the end of that season, I was just like, I've had enough of that as well. Like, and then I just kind of knew, and then I left there. And
Palace came up,
and then ended up going to Palace. Yeah,
and who was in charge at the time?
Doggy Freeman was a manager.
Yeah.
At Crystal Palace at the time. And I actually only told the story recently because Paddy McCarthy, who's gone in with John O'Shea now on the Ireland coaching ticket.
Yeah,
Paddy was captain at Palace, and I'd known Paddy for like playing against him and meeting him and whatnot.
Yeah,
and Doggy phoned me, and he was like saying, "No, Paddy's." Paddy dislocated his shoulder, I think, in pre-season.
Yeah.
So Dougie like phoned me, and he knew I was going to get released by Ipswich because we kind of agreed to part. And Dougie was saying to me, look, come on down here. I need you for 3 months because Paddy's out for 3 months, but I need a centre back.
Yeah.
And I was kind of, I'm not sure about that. Like, so Dougie said, look, just come down. You're going to play. He said, I don't even care if you train or not. I don't like, just, I need a centre back because I don't have anyone.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, fair enough. So I went down to Crystal Palace and signed a 3 month deal. Ended up staying 6 years.
But you kind of nearly played some of the best football of your career.
It
suited you, I'd say. Their style did it.
I don't know really what happened, man. It was just, I just came in at the right time. There was magic happening at that club.
They were growing.
And it was like, Dougie was a good manager, like, and he signed a lot of players. Like, that team that got promoted, I'd say, cost nothing. Like, I'd say it cost about 400 grand. It was all free transfers and academy products. I don't think they paid, geez, looking back now, I don't think they paid for anyone. Dougie just cobbled together a group of players, and I kind of came in. They'd lost their first four games of the season. Of that following season, and that's why Dougie was phoning me saying, look, I need a centre back because I've a young boy playing centre back and he's not ready, you know, and I don't have anyone else, so I need someone to come in and just fill in till Paddy gets back fit again. And fortunately for me, Paddy never got fit again.
So I stayed in,
it was just something happened. I just came into something. I just kind of looked around, I just went. And I knew a lot of those lads that were there from playing. I played with a few of them at other clubs and played against them. And just from playing against them, I knew what type of characters they were like. You know, they were proper lads, like serious, serious lads. Very good professionals, but tough boys as well. Like a lot of them were, you know. A lot of lads from like up Newcastle way and Manchester, like tough boys. And I just liked the environment. The first day I came in, I was like, and then the first game I came in, we won. So we were like bottom of the championship and we won a game. And then I think we won like 12 in a row.
Oh.
And went from bottom to top. It was like the weirdest thing ever. It was so random. It was just like game in, won 12 in a row on top of the league. And then Dougie Freeman fucked off. So he got headhunted by Bolton and he got like... he left, him and Lenny Lawrence and Curtis Fleming with the coaching team that were there, and they just left, man.
And who took off?
Ian Holloway came in then. So Ian Holloway came in like the November, and my contract was up because I only signed 3 months.
So
Ollie came in, and like he is as mad as what you think he is. Like,
yeah, he seems mad on TV.
Oh, he's as daft as everything that you think he is. And like, I think my contract was up in like 2 weeks and the club were trying to get me to sign. And I was like, no, I'm not signing. I'm not signing. And they were like, no, you have to sign. And I was like, no, I'm not signing. I'm finishing. I'm leaving. And in the end, like, Ollie, he used to call me into his office like nearly every morning. Like, what are you doing? And I was like, I don't know. I'm not sure. Like every day for about 10 days. And I think, I'm not lying to you, it got down to like a few days before my contract was supposed to expire, maybe on the 30th of November or something like that. And put me in an incredible bargaining position, like, because we'd won 12 in a row. We were top of the thing. Paddy still wasn't fit. So, like, the club were like going, you can't leave. And I was like going, oh, I'm leaving.
Give me a deal.
Yeah. Oh, so then I know it was like pretty much, you know, but I just kept saying no. And that's when I like started just like negotiating for myself, because I didn't have an agent at the time.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So like I was just meeting Ollie every morning. I was like, no. And in the end, I just put a deal on the table, and it was pretty good.
And was it for a few years?
Oh, no, I think it was 18 months.
Okay.
So like, I just said that was partly me as well. Like, cause I was like, going, look, if this turns sour, I don't want to be stuck here. Like, you know, I don't want to have to choose to stay and pick up a packet or whatever. So I was just saying, look, let's do 18 months, see how this year finishes out. And then, you know, obviously at the end of that year, we got promoted then.
Into the Premier League then, and like back up after an absence of about 10 years, was it? Close enough to it, I'd say, at that point.
It was a funny stat, man. I don't know if you've ever seen it, no?
No.
The longest gap between Premier League appearances.
Is you?
Is me. And do you know who's second?
Who?
Have a wild guess.
Ronaldo.
Yeah. I was in Premier Sports working there recently when Ronaldo came back, and I swear to God, the battery on my phone died because I was just people ringing and stuff. Like, someone put it up that the longest gap between Premier League appearances. I didn't know, did Ronaldo beat me? Did he beat me, or did I beat? So I think, anyway, what it doesn't matter. Crazy, I can't actually remember, but you know,
nice stat to have.
Yeah, but it came up like it goes. So I think it was something that I beat Ronaldo in. In something, the longest gap was like 12 years or something like that. From when I last played for Leicester to when I still played now. Did he beat it, or he just came in?
He beat it, yeah.
So he beat it? Yeah, so there you go. That was why he went mad. So, like, the only thing we get upset if I beat Ronaldo or something. But, like, so he beat my record of longest gap in Premier League appearances, yeah.
And then towards the end of that season, and we're right in saying that you scored a very important goal in the title race.
Oh, yeah.
Liverpool were 3-0 up against you, were they?
Yeah, Liverpool were 3-0 up at Selhurst. Man, we were safe. Like, I don't think we could go anywhere. We were like 10th.
You kind of going through the motions, kind of.
Well, like, we were counting down to holidays, like, because we'd a massive relegation battle that we'd come through really, really well. And what was funny was, like, the game previous to that was Man City at Selhurst.
Yeah.
So, like, obviously the two of them were going for the title.
Yeah.
It was Pellegrini's Man City. So we played Man City and they beat us. I think, I don't know what it was, two. I don't know, beat us something anyway. But my Yaya Toure scored a goal, like, he just ragdolled me out of the way. Like, just manhandled me, like, and I just, like, because he's actually bigger than me, like, he was huge. They beat us, and then the following week we're playing Liverpool, and I think if they beat us, they went level on points with City, but if their goal difference, they were like -7 behind them.
Okay.
So they were 3-0 up. And
this was going to make a difference to them as well. Yeah.
Well, they were going for 7, you see, so they were 3-0 up early as well. I scored an own goal that night as well, which is largely forgotten.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were 3-0 up, and I just remember their fans chanting, "We want 8, we want 8." You know, so they were, they went in full on attack mode then, and it could have been 8, but we managed to get to like the 80th minute or something like that. The wheels came off. I think it was the 80th minute or something, maybe 8, maybe later than that. It might have been like 80, I don't know.
I remember it was 80, crazy at the time.
83 or something like that, maybe something like that. I can't remember exactly. Just my one went in. And then they didn't, like ordinarily what should happen on a night like that is, as soon as we get one, they just go, okay, fine, we're not getting 8 now.
Yeah.
So let's just win the game, or let's just, you know, drop off into, by the way, that was a serious Liverpool team. Like
Suarez,
Sturridge, Coutinho, who's the other one? There was
fierce attacking team.
Oh my God. Gerrard was in it. Yeah. Yeah. Sterling.
Yeah.
Was playing for him. Glenn Johnson was playing with him.
Yeah.
Who are the attackers? Anyway, that was an outrageous Liverpool team. But even once we scored, it should have been like, okay, fine, we'll just see the game up. But they didn't. They kept coming forward. But Glenn Johnson was bombing on. Coutinho was just like, Gerrard was bombing on. Like, all the midfield players were just, everyone was going on. And it was like, And obviously the second one went in and the roof came off. Like as soon as it got the 3-2, it was just inevitable that like it was going to go to 3-3 because like you could see that they just like still couldn't. And I think Brendan Rodgers had like, who was the Danish centre-back they had? I went on to play later for Barcelona. I can't remember his name now. But I remember he was getting him ready and I was like, okay, he's going to, but he didn't bring him. He brought an attacker in after that.
Yeah.
But he just kept bringing on attackers, which was like, what are you bringing on attackers for?
Yeah.
You know, when he should have been getting centre-backs on the, Daniel Agger, was that his name? Was that centre-back for Liverpool?
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, so he had him on the bench and he was trying to get him ready and he didn't get him on. And then obviously the third one went in and I tell you, a couple more minutes, we'd got the fourth because they were gone. Like their heads are just absolutely, you know.
But it kind of shot, it was the headlines everywhere, like, kill off Liverpool's
title. Yeah, I think that was that then, yeah, because then they were behind and
it was going to be hard for them to come back.
It was going to be, I don't remember the exact permutation, but I think that pretty much put it to bed, yeah.
And did you see a big difference in the Premier League from in that gap, like in terms of the performance levels and on the pitch?
Definitely, yeah, absolutely.
Were they more athletic?
Yeah, the athleticism of the players changed, the attitudes have changed. Like I think around the time I was at Leicester in 2000, it was the first time like the foreign lads started coming in.
Yeah.
You know, especially the Italians. Like when I was at Leicester, we signed Roberto Mancini.
Yeah.
As at the back end of his career. Yeah, like he was, I don't know how old he was, like 35 or whatever. But like, as I said to you earlier, like all that Leicester team was just like hard drinking, hard training and hard, you know, it was old school mentality. Yeah. And then these lads started coming in and they were like eating pasta,
totally
drinking water. And like there was a thing then like where training started happening and all those lads who were looking after themselves were training like way better than everyone else.
Mm.
Whereas a lot of our lads would have been like kind of either hungover or tired or, you know, not fueling themselves right. So the standard training was a little bit different. But then as soon as like those lads started coming in, started setting different standards, all the young players coming through just went, okay, you can either be like them or you can be like them. And you kind of go, well, actually I want to be like the Italian guys because they're always fit, they're playing longer, they're injured less, they're training better, they're playing better. So it was right around that time, I think anyway, it changed. But then like fast forward to that year, 2014, I think that was, like it was totally different again. Like, you know, everyone was just a machine and the pace, the power, the strength, the athleticism was just through the roof again. Like, yeah.
But like you were playing at that level for the next three seasons and you were a steady club in the league. You weren't in the relegation zone or anything.
No, kind of mid-table club, weren't you? Yeah, we're fine. We finished 10th, 11th, 12th every year, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, like all the serious players that are coming into the league then, like, I mean, you know, so that year Suarez 40 plus goals or something like that.
Yeah.
Coutinho was just pretty much unplayable. Then you'd your Hazard, your David Silva. So all the really good players that are coming into the seriously talented boys that are coming in. And that was that.
So it comes to 2016 and you finish up at Old Trafford. Did you know you were finishing or
I think it was 2017, the year after the cup final. Cup final was in 2016.
Oh yeah, you played. So what was it like to run out of Wembley?
That was good, yeah. So the year after the cup final, that was good, man. Yeah, like, I mean, I grew up at a time when FA Cup was
massive.
Yeah, it was huge. Yeah. You know, I remember watching all the FA Cup finals. It was the biggest day of the year.
Yeah.
For everyone. So I don't know. No, maybe it's lost. I don't know. I don't think it has. I think it still is.
Still big after still what we seen at the weekend or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I mean, I know a lot of people complain about it now and you know, they want to scrap replays and they wanna, you know. But anyway, but look, we lost that and then the following year, you know, I was kind of it's 36 then I think. I think it was 35 when the cup final and then 36, just about turned 36 actually before the cup final. And then the following year, you know, the club was kind of moving on. And then I just played a handful of games that following year, but the last start that I had was at Old Trafford. Yeah.
So you went from Old Trafford to Turner's Cross. Was there a niche to come home?
There wasn't really. So I don't know how it came about, to be honest. Yeah, it was one of them. I don't know. Like I've never been the type that will plan things like that. It was just, you know, things come along and if I think it's a good idea, I kind of do it. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. But, you know, my missus was pregnant with her first kid at the time.
Yeah.
And obviously when you're living in the UK and you're not from the UK, it's a very transient type life. You know, there's no home, so to speak. you know, you're bouncing around the UK, apartments, houses, whatever it might be. So my missus was, my uncle was born in July, the season ended in May, so she was like 7 months pregnant.
Yeah.
And we were kind of going, right, what do we do now? Because I knew I was retiring. My contract was up when I was going to retire. And then I said to her, look, come on, we'll just go home. Well, she's from the UK, obviously, but like I said, do you want to go and live in Cork for a bit?
Yeah.
Have the baby and see what happens. And she said, yeah, that's fine. And then spoke to John and just decided to sign on for another year, really. I was 37 at the time, maybe.
And they had just won the league the year before, so they were in Europe. That was probably appealing to you as well, was it?
It was, yeah. I mean, look, yeah, that was definitely appealing. Yeah, absolutely. It playing the Champions League qualifiers and stuff like that as well. But obviously, at 37 years of age, you know, what you're going to be able to contribute isn't amazing. Maybe people expected a bit more from me, you know, but like I'd been playing since I was 18 to 37, it's pretty much 20 years, you know, play, like a lot of people play for a long time, but if you look at the amount of games they've played, it's not a lot. You know what I mean? Because a lot of people are out with teams or injured or whatnot, but I played a lot of football.
Like you were playing 37 games a season.
I played over 500 games, which is like, it's a lot of miles on the clock there, you know? So, I just came home and I don't regret it. I think it was an amazing experience, you know, like for me to come back and to be able to play, you know, to start off at Cork City and to be able to finish up at Cork City. Obviously, it didn't go well personally or for the club, you know. But
what do you think went wrong?
I don't know, to be honest. Dundalk were just a very good team.
Yeah.
And they just won it that year, you know. Yeah. I mean, Cork City won the league previously, but there was that ding-dong battle between Cork and Dundalk, and then we lost the cup final.
That's right, yeah.
In 2018, I think it was, maybe, to Dundalk.
Yeah.
And then that was that, really, to be honest with you. But I knew that I my ability to contribute to maybe the extent of what people thought, I wasn't going to be able to do that, you know. It's not 37 years of age. But what I will say is, like, I didn't take, you know, this, I wasn't on a big salary, you know what I mean? I know a lot of people, like I spoke to John, and again, I said to John, look, what's the average salary? And he told me, and I went, just give me that.
Yeah. You know? It wasn't like you took what you were on a palace or something.
Jesus, no, like, honestly, like, it was one phone call with John. I was just like, John, what's your wage structure? And he's like, oh, well, you know, they get this and these get these. I goes, just put me in the middle. Because like that's, you know, I'm not coming home. I'm not coming home for financial reasons. You know, I'm going home because I want to be great for me to play for my hometown club again. I'm not sure what I'll be able to contribute.
But there was a lot of hype when you returned as well, because it's not many clubs in Ireland get somebody straight in from the Premier League, if that makes sense. Yeah. You had been starting with Palace, you know.
2 years previous, I had a year where I was just only playing a handful of games, you know. But again, like I was 37, so it's not like I was 31 coming home and I had like a lot of, you know, but like I said, I came home, I wanted to contribute, and I feel like I did. And I wanted to go back into League of Ireland, and I loved playing some of the games up in Dublin, you know.
Yeah.
To be able to play it, you know, play this UCD place, you know, that was great for me. Yeah. You know what I mean? To be able to like just see it out. And I had my last year, and that was that. Like,
and did you go to Waterford for a season?
I went to Waterford. I should have retired, really, to be honest. But Alan Reynolds phoned me, and Rennie's convincing enough, like, you know. But that, I knew that wasn't going to end well, because Rennie just said to me, "Look, you don't have to train." So I was just going down for games, you know.
Just played matches,
like, you know, like, you know, he's like, was so stupid, like, you know. So I went down. But what I will say is, I played for Waterford at Turner's Cross, and we won. I'm not going to lie, that was mildly enjoyable. We came down to, I think it was like second game of the season, second, third game of the season, maybe.
You were getting abused at that match then.
Oh, abused, but like, you know, I came down and I think John was under pressure anyway at that time, but it was very early in the season, and I think we won 2-0.
Yeah.
Izzy Akinade scored a couple of goals, maybe, but that was a decent Waterford team, like Sebastian Heary playing in it. You know, it wasn't a bad Waterford team. It was just that with me not training and just kind of going down, you know, I used to go down some Thursdays and train on Thursday morning, and then just like, I used to just go meet them at the stadium for games and stuff. So like, if they're playing Dublin, I just go to Dublin and meet them, and that wasn't going great. Like, and but we started the season reasonably well, and we were winning some games and stuff, but I'd say by the I don't know what it was, May maybe. So maybe after like 10 games, I could tell that like I couldn't, you know, you can't
not for me.
I couldn't play last year, never mind not training this year. Yeah. But it's hard though. Like I know a lot of people look at it, but it's hard to let it go. You know what I mean? It's hard to like admit that it's over when it's been your life for so long. You know, it's all you know, it's all you do, it's all you are, and then all of a sudden you know it's over, but you don't want to admit it, and you kind of go, no, I can keep playing, and then you convince yourself, no, I can play for Waterford, like, yeah, without training. Hindsight, it was lunacy, like, but, you know, it's obviously then it finishes, it takes a bit of adjustment period, but I suppose the only good thing I say is at least I got closure, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
I don't think a lot of players get closure, because a lot of players kind of finish someone else's terms, if you know what I mean, like the decision is made for them. Whereas I think I just naturally died. It just came to a natural end.
You kind of nearly eased off towards the end. Yeah, that's kind of hard.
It just exactly, like a lot of players have an injury, or they get the contract's terminated, or whatever it might be, and it's over for them, and that can be quite, because it hits them like a bus, because maybe they're not expecting it or whatever. But I kind of knew that mine was dying of natural causes. You know.
And is it hard to adjust to life then after?
No, not really. I think I didn't. No, because of that.
Yeah.
Because it died naturally. So I was kind of going, like, what am I going to do? Complain? That, like, I knew I still couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So, like, you kind of accept it. Go, well, what are you complaining about? Like, yeah, it's not like, I know some guys finish maybe at 31, 32 and they kind of go, oh, maybe I could still do it.
Yes.
And they kind of maybe never scratch that kind of itch that they have. But if you saw me at Waterford, it was definitely over. You know what I mean?
And any interest in coaching or anything?
Not really.
No, it was never for you. No. Like, never did any badges.
Like the media wasn't for me either.
Yeah.
Like, if you asked me, would I be a coach or wouldn't do the media? I'd have said it's more likely to be a coach.
Yeah. And how did the media come about?
COVID, I'd say. Because obviously travel stopped.
Get lads up to the studios.
And there was stuff. There was nothing really happening.
Yeah.
And I just got a phone call one day saying, look, you know, obviously the TV stations in Ireland used to bring in lads from the UK and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Obviously travel restrictions.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought to myself, well, at least I get to go to work, because I was, what did you just cast him in emergency work? What did he call it?
That's what he had, the people in the media.
Essential worker, that was it. Yeah, I used to have a little note that you could go around. Jeez, that was mad, wasn't it? So, I was an essential worker. So I was driving up to Dublin, and because the league was still going on and obviously punditry needed to keep happening. So, it was almost just kind of like, what am I going to do, sit around for a year and do like under lockdown or whatever was going on? So just previous that, I was doing some radio stuff for Off the Ball and things like that. But again, like that was just more just something to do. I didn't have any, but then when COVID hit, and that 20, whenever it was, that's when it kind of really kind of took off, and COVID finished. And well, here I am talking to you.
Yeah, but you kind of got known in for kind of controversial comments and stuff. Is that a strategy on your behalf then?
Define controversial being, strategy. Know, like, define controversial. You
know, there's always a kind of a bad guy in the studio that would kind of say.
So I'm a bad guy now. Fuck.
Like, you did, I think, the Jesus, Premier Sports and Virgin would kind of use the clips and put it out there. Were you?
I didn't see any of those clips. So, anything I say, I stand over.
Yeah. Like, you're just honest.
It's what I see.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And Jesus, man, if you want to challenge me on any of it, do. But I think a lot of it stood up.
Yeah.
And people might not have liked it, but if in hindsight, I think a lot of it was accurate, maybe? Yeah. Or had it wasn't wild. You know what I mean? A lot of it was what I said was what I said. Obviously, I understand football. I understand how people feel about football.
Yeah.
If you say something bad about someone's team, people are going to get upset over it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's fine, you know? People...
And you stay away from social media.
Oh, I don't have anything to do with it, like, you know? So that's why I was interested in what you found controversial.
I just remember it'd be like clips you might make a comment about maybe Solskjaer or something at United, or you might make about Stephen Kenny or something like that. And all of a sudden, it would blow up online. And I was saying, like, were you told to go in there and be honest, or is that your own decision? Like,
no, it's my absolute complete autonomy over what I say. Not once has anyone in any team, and if they did, I'd walk straight out the door.
Yeah.
If I went in and a producer said to me, we have can you see this? I'd just be like, absolutely no chance. I would like turn around, I'd never work for that station ever again.
But I'm guessing that's the success. So it's your honesty. It's
my honesty.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that I'm right, but it's my truth. Yeah. It's like if I'm watching something, I'll just watch it and I'll see something and I just go, well, that's what I think. No, plenty of times I've been way off and that's fine too. Right. But like, you know, I think if anyone wants to review anything I've ever said, I think it's
enjoyable though, I'd say, is
it? I don't know, man, is it? Just going to do it. It's, you know, man, it's very good. I do enjoy it, and I enjoy working with the people that I work with. You know, I love working with Brian. You know, we've good crack. Brian's a cantankerous old fella, it's...
He's back in the Irish setup.
Yeah, he's back in the Irish setup. So, like, I enjoy working with Brian. I enjoy all the people at Virgin. They're so good. They're so good at what they do, and Premier as well. And as I said, it gives me kind of structure in terms of, you know, my week and my season. I get my schedule of what I have of games coming up.
You know when you're in.
There's a bit of to it and I enjoy it. So I'm going to keep doing it. And as long as the phone keeps ringing that people want you to come on, then I'll keep doing it as long as I want to do it as well, you know, because there'll probably come a time where I go, I can't bother doing this anymore. And I'll stop doing that as well.
Yeah.
But at the moment I'm enjoying it. I get to spend some time, you know, a lot of time with my kids at home.
Yeah.
You know, it's a nice schedule that I have, and I'm present at home, which is important, with the kids and obviously other interests as well.
And how your role then, you're back with Cork City again, kind of more like an advisory type of capacity, is it?
Like what I will say is, I suppose a couple of disclaimers out of the way. I don't get paid.
Yes.
Like, right. I I'm on any salary.
Yeah.
Like, I've never taken a red cent from the club. It is voluntary, with the exception of you know, just meeting with Dermot. It's an advisory role. I don't have any power at the club. You know, it's Dermot's football club. It's not like I have a veto or anything. Yeah. It's a purely advisory role, and I've offered my opinion on lots of things.
And how did it come about? Did you know him?
I know him, mutual friends up in Dublin.
Yeah.
I just met him and we had a chat, and I like people, and I think Dermot's a good person.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I'm sure he'd be the first one to admit that, you know, we made a lot of mistakes last year, like a lot of mistakes, but they were honest mistakes. You know what I mean? We were trying to do what we were trying to do. And I think Dermot's heart is in the right place, and that's the most important thing for me.
And would one of the mistakes have not been replacing Colin straight away? Like, or what do you think? I know when Liam came in, there was a couple of wins, and then...
Yeah, there was, like, when was you go, like, listen, man, I've analysed, I've gone back over my part in last year, like, I promise you, with a fine-tooth comb on things that I should have done better. You know, I should have been stronger on certain things. There were certain things that I saw that I probably, you know, made my point.
Yeah.
But then it kind of, like, you know, dragged on a little bit.
Yeah.
I should have been a lot more stronger. In some of the things that I said, and I don't think I was, and I've said this to Dermot as well, like, you know, I've apologized to him for that. I think I did kind of land down, but it's hard, I suppose, you know, like you said, Colin left, and then you're kind of, you know, Liam wanted a job. Liam took it. We had a couple of results. And then just the season just meandered, man. And I think a big turning point was losing Matty Healy in the middle of the park.
Yeah.
Like, he was a big player for us. Like, and he gave you real physicality in the middle of the park. But obviously then there was, you know, there's nothing we could do about that.
Mm.
You know, the boy wants to leave and his contract is up. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
You know, I think there is maybe, you know, trying to find a replacement, then it's hard, you know, like, you're scouring players and you're looking, and, you know, obviously you have a budget. I think a budget is important. Like, you have to stick to it.
Yeah. Mistakes have been made previously.
But exactly. I think Cork City fans out of most people should understand that, you know, that I understand that people are kind of screaming, oh, why are you signing players? Like, it's hard. You know, when you look at your budget, what versus what you can get in, you're kind of like, you know, you're hoping to get lucky, you know, and you're trying to sign players, and we found it very, very difficult. And then obviously Liam left. Of course, then the club was already in a difficult position. And then of course you kind of get stuck with the dilemma of trying to attract a manager while you're in a relegation zone.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's hard, because now all of a sudden it's not a massively attractive job, because managers are looking at it and they're kind of humming and hawing about it. And then you factor in that there's a budget as well. So then when you throw the budget into the fact that it's not an attractive job, it limits your pool of people that you can get,
yeah.
right? And it's very, very difficult. Now, I know the obvious answer to that is like, oh, throw more money at it. But like, worst case scenario, Cork City got relegated.
Mm.
But there's still a football club to get promoted back out of it, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of the... That's not defeatist. That's not us saying like, oh, we're happy to get relegated. It wasn't. I promise you, like, the amount of time and effort that we put in trying to find solutions, but it just couldn't come around. And then you kind of wonder, will we throw more money at it? And then, like, I know everyone looks at like Man City and PSG. And listen, if you had a state back club and you could throw like hundreds of millions at it, of course you could.
Yeah.
But Dermot is very, very budget orientated insofar as this is what we're going to spend, because otherwise it's going to get out of hand and then the club can get into an awful mess. And as I said before, like, people at Cork City, but fans of Cork City should realise that it can go terribly wrong very quickly.
I mean, a couple of years ago they went from being a double winning team to relegation in the space of a few seasons. So it does, you know.
And the club came back.
And they came back and they'll probably come back again.
Absolutely we will. And you look at the way we started this season.
Yeah.
Now, like I said, ideally it's not like we accepted relegation. We did, I promise you, we did everything humanly possible to try and fix it. But I just think that there was mistakes made leading up to it that kind of put us in that position. But we've spoke about that and admitted things that we should have done differently. But I do believe the club is on the right path now. I think Timmy's doing a great job. Super manager.
Is he the right man for the job?
Oh, look, I mean, like, yeah, we're playing well, man. Yeah. And we're winning games of football and there's definitely a different feel about it. And a good style. We're scoring goals. And it's all within budget, you know. Yeah. It's not, we've not broke the budget for anything, because, you know, the club can get into deep waters very, very quickly.
And what do you think about all the young players kind of coming
that's
through?
It, that's another ethos of it. But like, essentially, if we get promoted this year, you want to be in a position now where you can like start building blocks. Whereas last year, like one of the difficult things last year is by the time the takeover went through, you know, we're deep in the transfer window.
Yeah.
And like, again, it's a small pool of players in League of Ireland. And if you don't get in early and get your squad set up, by the time Dermot actually got the club and we could sign players, it was a depleted pool of players that you were looking at. And then you're kind of going, oh. And then we lost, obviously, Matty Healy, which again, I think was such a big one for us to lose. And then you look at the stuff with Keats at the back end of the year.
Yeah.
So there was obviously, we take responsibility for what we did, but also we have to be fair and say there was a lot of external things that we couldn't control that went against us as well. So there was just an awful lot of things just kind of unraveled. And again, yes, we could have reacted differently. We could have done things differently, but hindsight is a wonderful thing. But Dermot is as committed as ever.
Yeah.
And he is desperate to get back up in the Premier Division. And he's doing everything he possibly can to give Timmy what he needs.
Yeah.
And so far, so good. And I hope to God we get promoted. And at least if we get promoted, then we'll be in a better position to put in stronger foundations that we won't be putting out fires like we were last year, or firefighting on the fly like we were last year. Because when you're firefighting on the fly, it's gambling. You're hoping to get lucky with certain things, and you're hoping certain things fall your way, and then they don't, and then something does fall your way, and it just gets very... It can get into like a whirlwind situation very, very quickly. And I just found that that's kind of what happened last year a little bit. So next year, if we get back in the Premier League, and please God we do, the foundations of the club will be such that we will only just be adding to it, and we'll be in such a stronger position to stay up and then grow and build in a long-term kind of strategy, because that is what we're looking for. It's just to establish the club as a solid, strong Premier Division club, and then push to get the club back to winning titles and to get back to winning cups and competing in Europe. That is the ultimate goal.
And you see, like, you know, we've seen the Shamrock Rovers and stuff selling out stadiums now, which didn't happen years ago. Are you seeing a huge change in the League of Ireland as well? And, you know, huge potential there?
Yeah, League of Ireland's in great position. Like, in great position.
Yeah.
It's getting stronger and stronger. And whatever metric you use, be it crowds or quality of players or everything is growing. Everything is getting better, you know. We just wish we could get a little bit better, quicker, because, you know, in terms of facilities, because that's the next big thing, is get the facilities right, you know, pitches, the fan experience, stadiums, you know, make it such that, like, it's much more attractive. Like, it has a great fan base at the moment, but it's still so much more potential to it. So yeah, the league run is only going from strength to strength to strength, and I think it will keep going that way.
And it needs to be probably a bit more like an industry, like some of the clubs that you played for lower down the leagues in England had phenomenal probably facilities compared to what the League of Ireland has.
Oh, that was absolutely. I mean, you go down to like League One, League Two clubs now, they've got everything, you know, training grounds, stadiums, fan experience, everything is just geared up to it. And it's self-sustainable, you know.
And that's what you need.
That's what you want. You want it to be sustainable. Like, you know, you could come in and throw like a load of money at it. And if that goes wrong, you're in serious trouble then. As in like not, the club is in trouble. And I just think that the risk of doing that last year just wasn't, we didn't think it was worth it, because it was just the potential for it to go wrong and
it was a disaster,
to go like completely wrong was huge. Whereas, you know, the Sun still came up the day after relegation. And like we had a meeting like the Monday after the playoff game, like 24, 48 hours after it. And it was like straight down to business, right? How do we get back? What's the best thing we can do to get us back? Because we want to get promoted next year. There was no feeling sorry for ourselves. There was nothing, you know? But again, I just want to clarify that like, we didn't just accept that. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that we, oh, we get relegated and it'll be fine. It wasn't, I promise you.
That wasn't like, part of the agenda.
It wasn't, but like, it's not the end of the world, you know? And we're going to, hopefully going to have a good year this year, and then we'll be in a better position next year.
I suppose sometimes you have to take a few steps back to go forward, don't you? Like in many ways.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. But I'm sure we will.
So we usually finish up the podcast with a couple of questions in from the supporters. So we've only a few. Interesting one from Kevin. Kevin said, do you think you'd have won in All-Ireland for Cork in football if you didn't become a pro football?
Jesus, man. So
be handy?
They won a football in 2010, wasn't it? They beat, was it down?
That's right.
So I was a minor in 98. And there was a lot of lads on my minor team with Cork that went down to win our Ireland's. Noel O'Leary went down to win one in football. And there was a lot of lads who went down to win hurling medals as well. If I'd have stuck around for 10 years, I probably would have been part of that. But like 10 years in the GAA is a long time. I'm sure even Noel O'Leary would admit that he was shoveled a lot of shit between 98 and 2010.
Mick has an interesting question. He said, who was a great player you played with that maybe doesn't get talked about too much? Underrated, I suppose, player like.
I'll tell you, like, obviously, there's a player, there's a midfield player at Crystal Palace called James McArthur.
Yeah.
Scottish international. And I swear to God, like, what a football player. Like, he retired early because his, the distances and numbers and work rate that he put up was just like so far ahead of everyone else. He did the running of like two players in midfield. And he was technically far better than what he was. I think he won the cup with Wigan the year they beat Man City. It was James McArthur and James McCarthy in midfield. But when he came into Palace again, I was like, oh yeah, good player. Like, but it's only when you work with him on a daily basis and like you see how good he was. But I think he was a seriously underrated player.
Evan said, what's the story with you and Roma?
Oh yeah, I remember that.
They were tweeting mad about you.
They like me?
Was there some sort of thing going on in the background or what was going on?
No, there was nothing.
There wasn't?
No,
it was just a bit of fun?
I don't know what it was, to be honest with you, man. I still don't know what it is, but I don't know a lot about it either. So
So it was whoever was probably looking after their social at the time or something like that, probably. They were tweeting about you. Even when I think you joined City, they were even talking about you as well.
I don't know. I still don't know where these things come from.
And the last question comes from Robert. He says, one player present or past that you would have liked to have as a centre-back partner?
Oh, that's a good one. Rio, man.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Rio was a Rolls Royce, wasn't he? Like, he was, like, I know, obviously, the modern day, different players from when Rio retired, but, like, for 6 or 7 years there at Man United, he was effortlessly good.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't effortless, but he made it look that way. But I think Rio was probably, and he probably would have suited my style a bit better as well. Like, I mean, you know.
Did you ever get to play against him?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I played against him. He was just as good as it gets, really.
Yeah.
And for a long period of time, he was that good. Just never looked in trouble, never looked stressed, never last ditch. I say never looked stressed, I suppose. It was always that Torres thing, wasn't it? They said Torres always had his... No, was that like... That was Vidic as well, was it? Like, but yeah, if Torres used to do well against him, but like... But Rio was... I think he was... Top drawer him, man, yeah.
And like yourself, he's gone into the media business as well.
Yeah.
So it might be a thing with centre backs or something like that.
Possibly, man, yeah.
You're kind of watching from the back.
I don't know, but yeah, I think Rio was good. If I had a bit of time to think about that, no, I come up with some good ones. Company was a good player as well. Saul Campbell.
Yeah.
Remember when I first played against him, he was like, again, he was outrageous, like just, him and Company just as physical specimens. Like, I mean, to mark these fellas at corners, which I always used to get, like them fellas, you don't actually appreciate how big and strong and fast and aggressive they actually are.
And who was the best player you ever played with?
Oh, the best player I ever played with?
Yeah, who was the best player on your team? Like,
oh, I don't know, man, to be honest.
It's a hard one, I'd
say. Yeah, it's hard to pick up one player. Like, everyone, you know, obviously lots of good players, but yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know, man. I'd have to think about that one.
You won't want to.
I'd have to go all the way back to like 2000.
Yeah.
I'd say, I suppose, just for the crack, let's say Patsy Frayne.
Patsy Frayne. You'd be delighted with that.
I'd say Patsy's the best player I played with.
Well, I think that's a good way to leave this. The legend, that is Patsy. But Damien, thanks a million for coming in.
No worries, mate. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Well, I think I went on a bit there with Damien, but I could have actually gone for ages more, I think.
Oh, he had incredible stories there, and I know we were over an hour, I think, with that, but we probably could have got nearly another hour out of it with what he has.
Because like, I didn't even go into detail about any times that he was playing for Ireland or anything, because I know he did get capped a number of times. I didn't go into detail about his FA Cup final appearance and stuff. Like, I mean, he's literally been there at all levels of the game.
Yeah, and lot of big clubs in England, you know, a lot of players could go to England and, you know, they might travel around the National League or the lower leagues, but he's been at really big clubs like Hull, Leicester, QPR, they're Ipswich, they're big Premier League or they're about clubs.
And then to finish with Palace stories. Like that, like, you know, like, I mean, and Palace, a team that were on the, I don't think they've been relegated since he got them up, but I think they've been kind of a steady club.
They're pretty much mainstays. Yeah, they're mainstays. I don't remember them getting relegated.
Yeah,
but,
maybe they were, no, but
like,
I don't
FA Cup finals and everything. And like, it's funny how he went in there on a 3-month deal.
Yeah.
No intention whatsoever of staying.
Yeah.
And 6 years later, there he was, had captained them and everything.
And like that he's still involved. And he was honest there about his time back with the club, because I think a lot of fans might have been a bit harsh on him at the time, but he was 37. He was after playing a lot of football. He had a lot of, you know.
Yeah, you could tell there that, you know, he wanted to contribute what he could, and he felt like he didn't do, like he did to an extent, but he felt like he could have done more himself. And even kind of not just his time at Cork City as a player, but when he reflected there on last year and the mistakes that were made, and he's very open and honest. He kind of said there he took it personally that he apologised to Dermot for stuff that he could have done better.
Yeah. And this is new for him as well. Like,
exactly,
I mean, he hasn't been involved in kind of advising a football club before. Like you know, he's been a player.
Exactly.
He's kind of to be on the other side.
He's on the other side of the fence now, still involved in football, but in a completely different regard to how he was before.
With tough decisions. Like, yeah. And I know, listen, he's doing that kind of as a volunteer in many ways, because he's not getting paid for it. But I'd imagine he enjoys kind of being back in some capacity with the club. Like,
yeah, you can tell he's a football man.
Yeah.
Be it as a player or a supporter or a pundit on TV or whatever. He's a football man.
Yeah.
And he loves all aspects of football. Be it from, kind of said he thought he might end up in coaching, but he went the other way.
Yeah,
but
he
just loves football.
A lot of them say that as well. Like, a lot of them say that, like, you know, they don't intend on getting into punditry, but when they do, they kind of enjoy it, because it's like, I think it's kind of, you're in the same team all the time. And I'd imagine that's kind of part of it. You know what I mean? He was talking about Brian Kerr, and
there's still a team dynamic to it. Like, yeah,
Kenny Cunningham and a few others to be on. And it's the same group of lads that are always talking on TV. And I was saying that he comes across as controversial, but I think, I thought he was in trouble that time.
I wanted to see if you were going to throw anything at him. I should have,
but I couldn't remember. But all I know is that I think his honesty is a good thing, and that's what you need in punditry. I mean, it's why some of the best ones out there over the years. I mean, people go back to the days of Johnny Giles and Eamon Dunphy. Most of the time, it's just because they were honest, and the people on the UK TV channels weren't.
It was very kind of not scripted, I suppose, but watered down, maybe. Like, and even Damien said there, if someone came along to him and he had a producer in his ear saying, "Say this," then he'd be gone. Like, it's important that he speaks his mind and what he wants to say. And that's as you were saying, in punditry, that's what you want. You want a fella if it is controversial or whatever, or if it's just what he's thinking, you want to hear that. It's more raw and more natural to the match you've watched or you're about to watch or whatever. So yeah, that's good.
No, it's great to have him around at the club. And I think, I think as the years go on, he'll develop even more knowledge of the overall kind of background, I suppose, of League of Ireland football. Because he was away from it for a while as well. So I think he can see there's huge potential there. And it was great to hear that actually as well, about European football, back winning titles. And I know that's probably a bit down the road, but that's the goal.
Yeah, that is the goal. You just thought of something there. He was talking about his record of, the 12 years between Premier League appearances, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Did he play a senior game for Cork City? No. Was there a League of Ireland record there, a similar time?
There has to be. Sure, it would be longer.
That's nearly 20 years, is it? Yeah.
It would be, was it 2000?
He said it was about, was it 2000 he left, was it?
18 years, it's
probably the record holder.
Like,
there,
I remember seeing him, and he was a fullback when I seen him, but he explained that he was only filling in. And he was a good player. Like, I mean, I remember seeing him at the Cross. I remember the Derry Nan was only after being kind of built, I think, around that time. And I remember sitting there at one of the matches and seeing this fella, and he was like, he's a good player. Like, and the next thing, he wasn't with us long in the first team, and the next thing, he was gone to Leicester. And like, to make your debut at Old Trafford.
And then ended at Old Trafford as well. It's like some
sort of kind of Ryder Rovers type of stuff, the way his career went.
It's almost like a football thing, the way things line up like that. Like, you know how when you draw someone in the cup, you play them nearly the same time in the league. These things always happen in football somehow.
Fascinating. Yeah, I think people will enjoy that. And I know we've kind of mixed up the podcast over the last couple of weeks with the old and the new kind of, and looking back.
Players and coaches, for example. It's nice.
And we kind of had somebody that played, but now is kind of involved off the field, which is totally different again to what all the other lads had. So that's kind of something different.
It's a whole different perspective on the club and perspective on football as a whole. And really interesting to hear what he does and what he kind of oversees. And the part he plays in the goings on at the club, I suppose.
Speaking of the club, this weekend coming, top of the table clash away in Limerick.
3-2 away, tickets we've put out there today about tickets. We've only been given 350. Yeah. That's the allocation we got from Treaty. Those are going on sale this evening to season ticket holders. And then tomorrow, they'll actually probably be out by the time you're listening to this, on general sale. Wednesday afternoon. But 350, that you'd imagine that'll fill out.
There's always a good crowd go up there for that.
There is, and even more so when it's going to be a top of the table clash, as we were saying. But there'll be a huge atmosphere there on Friday night. I think I saw Treaty were tweeting along the lines of they could be on for their biggest ever crowd at the Markets Field, which you'd expect. Cork City come to town.
We bring a crowd
and they come to us, that chant, "You're only here to see the city," that kind of thing. We're kind of massive, we say that from time to time. But we'll see what kind of crowd we get on Friday. You might have seen as well, Cahill, Jaden and Matthew Murray have been called up on the 17s. So they won't be there on Friday.
That's a big loss, though.
It's a huge loss.
Cahill was starting there and obviously scoring goals and assists.
Matthew got on a couple of days, Longford away, I think. Jaden had an impact as well. So those are three first team players that were missing. Yeah. And I think there's some, Bagsy was on the bench last week, so he could be involved. We'll have Tim's press conference tomorrow, so we'll know more on the injury front and players that could be coming back into the fold.
And they can postpone it for underage.
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't know the rule there or what it is.
They can for a senior international and an under 21, I think.
I don't even think they're postponing them anymore because the Premier Division actually aren't on this weekend because they stopped for now for the international break.
Yeah.
But it's not considered at the First Division, I don't think. And yeah, as you said, underage internationals, I don't think they would anyway.
Probably wouldn't count.
But yeah, that's the danger of having such a young team, I suppose, that this can happen.
Yeah, but I suppose it opens the door for other players.
Yeah, 100%. Players that might have been kept out by Cahill, for example. And yeah, we'll see how that goes on Friday night.
And did they play a friendly behind kind of closed doors kind of thing this week?
I think there was a training match with basically just a training session yesterday, to get some players on. Don't know how it went or anything like that, but just kind of getting minutes into some of the players that didn't play.
Yeah, some of them are probably, you know, a bit rusty from not getting match time, I'd say.
Exactly, and coming back from injury, it's good for lads like that as well to just get a bit of match experience, I suppose.
And the women this weekend, where are they after?
So the All-Ireland Cup is back. We're in Group B and it's a home game in Ferry-Carrig Park because the pitch in Turner's Cross is unavailable. But so we're against Wexford down there. It's Wexford, Shelburne and Cliftonville are in our group. We actually went away to Cliftonville in the same tournament last year to Belfast. But Wexford this weekend in Ferry-Carrig Park, 6 o'clock kickoff. And it's an interesting one. It's because it's a new tournament, new competition. I don't know, will clubs or Danny experiment with the squad and all the players might get in? Yeah, we're all looking forward to that one and we'll see how that one goes.
Any other big things happening at the club at the moment?
We're back at the Marina Market on Friday. We're away this weekend, which means we're back open down there. Busy enough in the test run we had last time out. Mm-hmm. So hopefully now we'll get more people in and sell a few more jerseys and tickets for the next home game.
Could buy something down there instead of an Easter egg.
You don't need Easter eggs anyway.
No, chocolate's best.
Cork City scars.
There's a shortage of chocolate according to the
media. Would there
be
a market for a Cork City Easter egg? I don't know if we've ever looked at that, but
that might be a question for Spotify this week. I know we've got some questions. So what kind of merchandise would you like to see on sale in the shop? Yep. That would be...
If you scroll down there now, there's a question tab on the page somewhere.
Yeah,
let us know what you want to see. No matter how wacky it is, give us the idea. The worst we can do is not bring it out.
We gave a funny one a few weeks ago. What was it? The coldest one.
The coldest match you've ever been to.
Was there any funny answers to that?
There was a lot of, there was a couple of Munster Senior League matches were thrown in. And I think unanimously everyone was saying it was that UCD game at Turner's Cross.
Very cool game.
That was ridiculous. And that was kind of, everyone was nearly in agreement with that one, that was just next level cold.
Yeah, so this week, so we want to find out, maybe it's an Easter egg, maybe it's, I don't know, sunglasses for the summer, I don't know, maybe boxer shorts.
I saw a couple of mock-ups of, you know, the kind of like Hawaiian shirts, maybe a Cork City shirt or something
like that.
Would you wear it?
Yeah. I personally wouldn't. But
that could be the podcast uniform, maybe we'd be in here wearing that. But let us know anyway, and we might get a couple of mad ideas or some really good ideas.
Yeah, we never know. It could be the next big thing at the club shop. I suppose we better wrap up because people must be exhausted after listening to the long interview with Damien at this stage. And we'll be back next week with another pod. So see you then.
See you next week.